It's interesting the connections that you can make when you begin to meet with people. Perhaps the connections that you can make when you begin to meet with your neighbors. Walter often likes to make fun of me because I know almost everybody, or I can find connections with almost anybody. And so he likes to make fun of me sometimes, and then I have to remind him that he may have been in this church longer, but I have 15 more years experience living in Manitoba. This was shown to me again this week. I had the privilege of visiting some of our seniors. And in one of my visits, I was visiting Sarah Thiessen. In one of my visits, it came out that her son is Don Thiessen. Now, that name sounded very familiar to me, so I had to look at some family photos that were on her wall, and lo and behold, here was my old electronics teacher, was her son. And so, there's connections anywhere, and that was fun for me. I want to remind you this morning, I'm preaching my second sermon in the series, The Art of Neighboring. There are books available. These bright yellow books are in the foyer. So I encourage you to pick one of those up. There's still a good number left. As well, on Wednesday evenings, I'm hosting a bit of a community care group here at the church. Anyone is welcome to that. And we debrief the sermon a little bit and chat through some of these questions of neighboring. So I encourage you are welcome to come on Wednesday evenings. Join us in the Heritage Hall at 7 p.m. Last week, when I began my sermon series, The Art of Neighboring, I talked about taking the commandment of Jesus literally. His command to love our neighbors. What if we take that command as literally as possible and focus on loving and caring for those who live next door? These people who have built houses, who have built homes right beside ours. And so I challenged, how many people here can name their 8 closest neighbors? On the table with the books, you'll find charts. Feel free to take one of those charts. And it has your house in the middle and then 8 surrounding blocks. Can you fill those in? Can you fill in your 8 closest neighbors? That was my challenge. And so I hope that you were able to learn some of those names that perhaps you didn't know. Hope you were able to get to know even just their first and last names this last week. This morning, I want to continue my sermon series by talking about one of the barriers that we face in neighboring. And so I've titled it The Time Barrier. A few years ago, Michelle and I began to keep a large whiteboard calendar. We posted it on our wall, and we still have it now. This calendar, though, became very important to us. At the time, we were coordinating the college and career group at Fort Garry MB Church. I was beginning my final year at SBC, which was a mix of time in class and time in my internship at Fort Garry as well. Michelle was in her final year of education at University of Manitoba. This meant mixing her time in between classes at the university and in her practicum. We both had stuff in the evenings, from sport commitments to appointments to trying to find time to buy groceries. We also only own one vehicle, and so knowing who needed it and when and where each other was going became almost impossible without this calendar. We had assignments due, classes to teach, and sermons to preach. The whiteboard calendar became essential for us to stay on top of all these things. We were running at full capacity, and that was without children to worry about. I think this way of living is all too common. We are busy rushing from one meeting to the next, relying on our phone to notify us when it's time to move on to the next appointment. Life is lived at a very, very fast pace in our day and age. We have 24 hours each day. This has never changed. In the last 100 years, several conveniences have been added to our lives to make things simpler and more efficient. We have dishwashers, washing machines for clothes. Transportation has taken leaps and bounds, maybe even quite literally, to get us from point A to point B quicker. Phones are in our pockets, and we can send messages in a matter of seconds rather than putting a piece of paper into the mail. These things have shaved hours off of household chores, travel, and communication. And yet, we still feel pressed for time. How on earth are we going to get to know our neighbors? Life is too full. We have many friendships that we are already trying to keep up with. How are we going to add more? Perhaps some of you thought these thoughts this week after my sermon last week, that you simply don't have the time to get to know your neighbors. So I ask myself, and I ask you, why are we so busy? I can think of several reasons. One that I thought of as I prepared was FOMO. Now, I'm looking at the younger crowd a little bit to know what FOMO means. FOMO is an acronym. F-O-M-O. It stands for fear of missing out. And I think that point drives our busyness. We are fearful that we are going to miss out on something. Whether that is a business opportunity, time with close friends, a paycheck, a decision made without you, or even maybe a great sale. Missing out on these things can cause us anxiety, especially if you don't know if you're going to miss out on something. The simple idea that you may be missing out on something can cause stress and uncertainty. We would rather keep living our life at 100 miles an hour because if we stop, we might miss out on something. This is the kind of situation that we find in the story of Mary and Martha. In Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42, which I'll read this morning. Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. I'll be reading out of the NIV. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened up her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha became distracted with all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." This short story of Scripture doesn't appear anywhere else in any of the other Gospels. And yet, to me, it seems like one of the most relatable pieces of Scripture. Martha has extended her hospitality and welcomed Jesus into her home. And when she gets Jesus settled in and sitting, she begins milling around and preparing the food, maybe grabbing water for everybody. And milling around, and with all this other work that comes with having Jesus and presumably 12 other people in her house. It's easy to imagine how Martha felt. Here you have 13 extra guests in your home, and you are getting zero help preparing. If that were you, you would feel frustrated and annoyed because your sister is just sitting on the floor in front of Jesus when she should, of course, be helping. And of course, you're in the right doing all this work, preparing all these things, Of course you're in the right. You have Jesus in your home. You need to serve him. Who else should be focused on? Martha felt so justified that she was right, that she went to Jesus to say, hey, you need to get my sister to help me. She felt so justified to go to Jesus because you already know that Martha has already shot Mary the look a few times. We know that look, or at least I know that look. You can just imagine Martha pacing behind Jesus, trying to the silent cues to get Mary into the kitchen. And Mary's not having it. Mary is staying right where she is. So Martha goes straight to Jesus and makes her plea. And we hear what happens next in the story. Jesus points out that it's actually Martha who is the one who's being distracted. Jesus explains that, in fact, Mary is the one who's in the right. It doesn't make sense to us initially, does it? I'm sure for many of us, if we have guests in our home, of course we need to get things ready. We need to serve them. Perhaps Martha is toiling around doing all this work to make sure that she doesn't miss anything. And yet, we know from Jesus' response that she is missing out on what is truly important. We need to get better at slowing down our lives. We need to do this for ourselves. We need to do this in order to draw nearer to Jesus, as Mary shows us. But we also need to do this in order to love those around us. If we are unable to slow down enough to learn a couple of names of the people who live around us, then I would perhaps suggest that our priorities might not be in the right place. John Ortberg has coined the term hurried sickness. And he writes on the topic, "For many of us, the great danger is not that we will renounce our faith. It is that we will become so distracted and rushed and preoccupied that we will settle for a mediocre version of it. We will just skim our lives instead of actually living them." We rush around trying to live the best life possible, the best version of our life that's possible, and yet this rushing is exactly what distracts us from being able to do that. We rush around because of our fear of missing out, and yet it causes us to miss out on what is really important, a true experience of faith. I like how Ortberg has labeled this hurriedness as a sickness, because it truly can be. It's not good for us to run at such speed for prolonged amounts of time. Not only affects our spiritual health, I think it affects our physical health as well. Our bodies need rest. One thing that's very important to remember also is that love takes time. Isn't that right? We all need quality time in order to feel loved. Can you remember an interaction that you've had that it has felt rushed, it has felt very unnatural, like someone's just trying to check off a box and get through? When someone's rushing you, you don't feel loved, do you? Perhaps it was a checkout clerk. Perhaps it was an old friend that you haven't seen in a while that simply just didn't seem as excited to see you as you were to see them. That's a painful feeling. Love requires time, and time is the one thing that hurried people don't have. Jesus got a lot done in his time on earth. but I would suggest that he never really seemed to be in a hurry. He lived a passionate, purposeful life, but was never in a rush. We see throughout the Gospels that Jesus took time to relax once in a while. Our scripture reading this morning alluded to that a little bit. Now, it's a small detail of that story. I'm sure that you've picked up on it. It's a detail that always gets included when we hear the story. But on the boat in the storm, Jesus was asleep. Jesus had spent a lot of time preaching to these large crowds, and in Mark 4, he goes on to explain some of the parables just to his disciples. He had spent all this time teaching the crowds and his disciples that when they hopped on the boat, he left the rowing to the disciples, and he laid down for a nap. That's interesting that we see this balance in the life of Jesus. This balance of work and rest. There are more stories that we can read in the Gospels of Jesus going off by himself to pray, taking time for himself, and taking time to spend with his Father in heaven. Do you feel that a lack of time is going to be a barrier for you as you try to neighbor well? Are you running around? Are you too busy to notice what's happening in the lives of those living next door or even learn their names? I think this is a common feeling for many of us. Even for myself, living in an apartment building, if I step out my door into the hallway, it's because I'm on my way somewhere, and I've probably only given myself the exact amount of time to get there. It happened again this week. I stepped out my door, and a neighbor was stepping out his door at the same time, and he said, "Oh, you seem to be in a rush." It's like, ah, because I knew I was going to be preaching on this Sunday. You seem to be in a rush. If I'm intent on getting out of a conversation with my neighbor because I'm in a rush somewhere else, where are my priorities in that moment? I'm certainly not showing a genuine concern for my neighbor's physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being if I'm just trying to get out of that conversation. There is a balance that needs to be checked and rechecked in our lives. There are some myths that we tend to believe when it comes to our time. I think they'll be up on the slides. The first is that everyone lives like this. Everyone has tight schedules. Everyone has meetings to be at. Everyone has places to be. Everyone lives at a fast pace. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that people do exist that have figured out a balance of busyness in their life. Balancing time for those around them, balancing time with the Father in heaven as well. The second myth that I considered calling my favorite is that things will settle down. I say that this is my favorite not because I like it, but because it's the one that I fall into the most. Things will slow down once I finish my current semester of school. I'll have more free time once this sermon series is done, once I hand in that essay, once I meet that deadline, etc. Things will calm down. The truth is that once we meet one deadline, there's another. We must be the creators of space and balance in our lives, no matter what the season is, no matter what deadlines we are facing. This myth that things will slow down in the future can become a very easy excuse to push things off. I'll get to that when I have more time. I'll meet my neighbors after I'm done this semester, after this deadline at work has been met. It becomes very easy to push things off. And that is the one that I am most guilty of. It's up to each of us to find this correct balance in our lives. Some have higher capacities than others, and so there is no cookie-cutter method or schedule that's going to fit each of us. But I do think that if time is going to be a barrier between us getting to know our neighbors, then something does need to change in our schedules. Creating time in our schedules can seem a bit countercultural, I think. But consider Mary once again in the story from Luke. We found her sitting at Jesus' feet listening to him. Now, this would have been very countercultural for the day. If it's anything like Tanzanian culture, then the women were responsible for making the food, getting the table set, and even sometimes the women would have to go to a different room to eat with the children. So the fact that Mary wasn't helping prepare anything would have been very much against her culture. Jesus reveals to us, though, that Mary is in the right in this story. Mary is on the correct path because she's going against the grain. Pausing for Mary was the right thing to do. And in our attempt to be better neighbors for those around us, we may have to go against the cultural grain in order to be good neighbors. And Michelle and I had a new neighbor move in this summer. I was in the midst of reading this book, starting to prepare my sermon series. And so I began to feel a nudge that these new neighbors, I should bring them a loaf of bread. Each week, I bake fresh bread for me and Michelle, and for some reason, I felt a nudge that I should bring them a loaf. I felt this nudge, and then the excuses started. You know, what if they're gluten-free? People knocking at your door randomly is weird. They won't like that. Taking food to strangers is not a good idea. Even once I had the loaf baked, I had to keep on forcing myself because then the excuses continued. Hey, you know, this bread is too hot to bring over. That's a lame excuse. I don't have a nice platter. I don't have a nice plate to put this thing on to bring it over there. You know, it's just not a good time. So if you can imagine me in my kitchen, in my apron, pacing back and forth, that's exactly what happened. Just trying to convince myself, get up enough courage to do this. It's weird randomly knocking on someone's door without being invited. At least that's what our culture tells us. But it's okay to go against the grain. I ended up working up enough courage to bring the bread over, knock on their door to learn their names. Turns out they love sourdough. They were very open for a conversation with me. And in the days that followed, Michelle even had the opportunity to invite them to church. James Bryan Smith is an author, and he wrote a book called The Good and Beautiful God. In this book, he writes about the idea of creating margin. Margin and space is important. Imagine reading a book that has no margins around the paper, where the words just shove right up against the edge of the paper. Can you imagine how annoying that book would be to read if there was zero space except for letters on that page? This is the example that Smith uses, that space and margin is important. We as humans need space or we're going to wear ourselves out. If we can't create time and space for our neighbors, then we're going to be terrible neighbors. So what do we need to do to create space? First thing is make the main thing the main thing. Make the main thing the main thing. What are you going to choose to be the main thing in your life? I would suggest that if we don't set our own priorities, then others are going to set our priorities for us. What are you going to make the main thing in your life? Do you want to make a difference in your neighbor's life? There's a choice that has to be made. The second thing, eliminate time stealers. There's a famous story of Michelangelo creating his David sculpture where he says, making the sculpture was easy. I just eliminated everything that wasn't a masterpiece. We must eliminate time stealers. This may mean trading in good for the best. Trading in good things for better things. Because not all time stealers are negative. One example that often comes up is having your kids in sports. That can be so busy. How many directions are you going? Of course, we want the best for our children, but is there a limit to some of these things? Again, choices to eliminate time stealers may have to be made. And then we need to allow interruptions and be flexible. We must create the right kind of margin that allows us to be interrupted. If we are working against deadlines and we are crunched for time, then there's no flexibility to be interrupted. So how can we create a schedule that has room for interruptions? Interruptions to chat with our neighbors when we step out into the hall. I guess that would be very apartment specific, but one practical thing that Smith suggests in his book for creating margin is something that I would like to leave you all with and suggest and challenge you with this week. I know, another challenge. I want you to try and sleep for 8 hours at least once a week. Sounds odd, right? I should be telling you to spend more time with your neighbors, but I think that will come as you create space in your life. One place to start creating time and allowing space is allowing your body to rest properly. Our bodies were not meant for hurried sickness. We need to pause. We need margin. So over the next couple of weeks, plan at least one night a week where you can sleep for 8 hours. Now this means probably planning on spending at least 10 hours in bed. I'm not talking about 8 hours in bed, I'm talking about 8 hours of sleep. So that means more time in bed. One night a week. This is a practice in creating margin and in creating space. As we learn to create space and margin, we create time for our neighbors. We show them that they are worthy of our time and friendship. Is God calling you to create space for your neighbors? Is God calling you to create space for your neighbors? I'll leave you with that question this week.